Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Dara McDonald. We are recording this on June 13th. If the month is June, that means Kyle Schwarber is red hot, and it means that the trade deadline is just over the horizon. That's why you love MLB Trade Rumors, because we're going to talk about that. Of course, you probably already know this, but you can get our analysis all the time on the website. You can also get a newsletter sent to your email every weekday, mlbtraderumors.com/newsletter. If you sign up there, you'll get it delivered right to your inbox, and we will do the analysis here in audio form on this podcast. I also want to take a quick second to hype up some of our original content on the site, because in addition to analyzing the happenings in the baseball world, we have been looking back at recent deadline deals where a team sold a rental piece and got a good return. We've been counting down from 10. Yesterday, we published number 4. That leaves 3, 2, and 1. Maybe 3 is already out by the time you're listening to this. I don't know, but it's a very fun series and we're enjoying doing it and hope that you enjoy reading it as well. Joining me on the podcast this week is my colleague, Anthony Franco. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm good, Dara. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Excited to get into the news, the hot stove. Let's start with one strange thing that happened this week. Marcus Stroman basically got up on top of a soapbox and said, "Hey, everybody, I want to stay with the Cubs." And the Cubs said, "We're good." Do you want to run it down for us, Anthony?
Yeah, so Stroman's been kind of angling for an extension publicly for a while. There were reports that they had sort of preliminary talks during spring training, which seems like those conversations are basically Stroman's camp kind of reaching out to the Cubs saying, "Hey, we're open." And the Cubs saying, we'll think about it. We'll get back to you." And at least according to Stroman, thus far have not done that. Which seems maybe a little bit similar to the Wilson Contreras situation last year, where Contreras was also very public about wanting to stay with the Cubs. And the front office kind of the entire way was like, "Yeah, well, we'll think about it. We'll think about it." But they never really seemed to engage in those discussions and never seemed to have a ton of interest in actually keeping him around long term, which is fine. You know, I mean, teams have a finite budget and they make decisions on what they think are the best long term investments. I don't think that the Cubs have to engage in extension talks with every player who publicly angles for one. But given that Stroman can opt out of his contract at the end of this year, seems likely to do so unless he gets injured, and the Cubs are not very good, all that kind of points to me towards him being traded within the next 6 weeks. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question because we've talked a lot on the podcast about how guys who are theoretically rental pieces because they have an upcoming opt-out or player option, however you want to frame it. It makes it a tricky trade scenario because if, you know, a team acquires Stroman and he pitches well, he'll be gone. But if he suddenly, you know, needs some sort of serious surgery or something like that, he'll be still around for, I think it's $21 million on his 2024 salary. So there's just more downside than the traditional rental piece. But the other thing that you wrote about the Stroman situation the other day and what you pointed out is that he's already received a qualifying offer in his career. So unlike the Contreras situation, there's no safety net there for the Cubs. With Contreras, they eventually didn't work out a deal, but at least, you know, they made him the qualifying offer. He turned it down, signed with the Cardinals. They're going to get a draft pick out of it. With Stroman, they don't have that safety net. So that would seem to increase the desire to get a trade done from their point of view.
Yeah, I agree. And then we'll talk about this later, I think, as well. But the starting pitching market on the trade front this year just doesn't seem like it'll be all that good. I mean, we'll see whether teams like the White Sox or Cardinals fall out and kind of make players available. But as of right now, there's not a ton of slam dunk veteran starting pitching trade candidates. And so your point about Stroman having that $21 million option, which is kind of just pure downside for a team, because like you said, if he gets hurt, then they're on the hook for that. And if he continues pitching as well as he is, which is sub-3 ERA, number one ground ball rate among starters this year. Like, he looks like the Blue Jays version of Stroman, who was an all-star caliber pitcher. But I think that even with that kind of 2024 risk of injury or something like that, that the scarcity of the starting pitching market this year is just going to be enough that there will still be a fair bit of interest.
Yeah, I think the next few weeks will be really interesting to watch the standings, because one thing we've been talking about on this show is that there's so few clear sellers right now. There's probably only like two or three teams that you can't even squint and say that maybe, you know, if they have a hot week, they're contenders. So it seems like there's not a lot available right now. But, you know, like we saw with the Juan Soto situation last year, things can change at this time of year with the deadline coming up. So let's move on to another subject. The New York Mets, the biggest payroll in the history of baseball, and they are currently 31-35, and they just lost Pete Alonso. Do you want to talk about that for a second, Anthony?
It's bad. You know, they're
hot take. It's bad.
More games under 500. They've been outscored by 23 runs. Obviously, not what they expected. You know, you talked about the payroll that I think after you include luxury taxes is going to be pushing like $500 million. But even aside from the money that they're spending, like this was a 101 win team last year. So, and then they went out and signed the reigning AL Cy Young winner. Like, even if you kind of decouple payroll from, you know, the results, like this is just not at all what this team should be. They're 16th in runs. The rotation hasn't been good. I think they're 25th in rotation ERA going into play on Tuesday. And the offense has basically just been Alonso, Brandon Nimmo, who was really good in April, okay in May, and Francisco Alvarez. And now, like you said, Alonso's gone for maybe a month or so. And it's just, I don't know where the runs are going to come from. Now, the NL playoff picture is not very good. The NL wild card is pretty bad. There's still time, but I guess if you were Billy Epler, do you think that there's, first of all, do you still see this team as a deadline buyer? And if you were the GM, like what would be kind of the biggest flaw of this roster that you think you would try to attack in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think they've put themselves in an interesting position, because what they've maintained is that they're spending money because they want to hold on to their prospects. That was what they've been saying, is that they didn't, you know, they regretted giving up Pete Crow Armstrong in the Javi Baez deal a couple years ago. And so their strategy has been to spend money in order to keep the younger players. And they've been integrating the younger players this year. You know, you mentioned Alvarez, but they also have Brett Beatty up there and Mark Vientos. But then that puts them in an interesting position here at the deadline where, you know, they've made it clear that they want to hold on to these core pieces. So then if you do want to buy, like, what are you giving up? What prospects are you putting on the table? But yeah, you mentioned the run scoring. I mean, the rotation, I would have a slight bit of optimism on the rotation just because they dealt with so many hiccups early on in the season with like Verlander being hurt and then the Scherzer suspension, and Carrasco was out for a while as well. So I think there's at least some case for expecting for better results there. But, you know, the offense, I think, would be a more obvious target to upgrade. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. It's just a matter of, I guess, identifying which position you're talking about. Because Alvarez, like you said, has come up, and he's been really good behind the plate. And they're going to have Omar Narvaez coming back as well. So catcher is not really an issue. Now, throughout the infield, once Alonso comes back, he's at first base. You've got Jeff McNeil, you've got Beatty, who was really good in April, has not been good basically going back to May. And then you have Francisco Lindor, who's obviously going to stay at shortstop, even though he's not really hitting well. And then the outfield, across the outfield, you've got Mark Canha, Nimmo, Starling Marte, Tommy Pham's in there. You've got Daniel Vogelbach at DH. Like, you have a lot of established veterans who just kind of aren't playing to their level. And so maybe at DH, you know, you could talk about, you find a clearer upgrade over Vogelbach or Pham, that's fine. But I guess my question would be, so if you're going to address the offense, like which of those guys are you bumping out of the regular lineup? Are you considering going after a corner outfielder and like benching Starling Marte? Is that, would that be on the table for you?
A great question. A great question. It's a tough spot for Billy Epler. I honestly don't know. It's a tricky situation. I'll be interested to see how he plays it. Let's move on now to the Astros. Now, they're another interesting team, playing much better than the Mets, but, you know, a little bit less than what we've seen from them in recent years, not quite as dominant. They've had some injury issues, particularly in the rotation. You know, you have Lance McCullers is still struggling to get healthy. Luis Garcia has Tommy John surgery. Jose Urquidy has been out for a bit. And yet, general manager Dana Brown came out this week and said that they could look for pitching, but they're more focused on the lineup. Was that surprising to you, Anthony?
Not too much. I mean, I think the back of the rotation is still a question mark for me, but they've had guys like Brandon Bielak and JP France and Ronald Blanco have kind of stepped in, and they've outperformed their peripherals a little bit, but they've been okay and good enough for as a fourth, fifth starter, more than capable of kind of stepping in, given all the injuries. And obviously, you've got that top three of Framber Valdez, Cristian Javier, and Hunter Brown that's among the best, like, one through threes around. So to me, like, I agree with Dana Brown that the offense is probably the bigger concern. The outfield especially seems like the question for me because, I mean, you got Kyle Tucker in one outfield spot, but then the other ones, Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers, they're pretty good players, but I think it's more of a situation where you'd want one of those guys in your starting lineup or a kind of loose platoon arrangement between the two of them as opposed to having to run out both of them on an everyday basis. Then, as you mentioned, they just lost Yordan Alvarez, the injured list. So that's kind of pushing Corey Jolks into the left field DH mix pretty regularly, and Jolks isn't really hitting much as a rookie. Obviously, you've got a lot of uncertainty about what you can expect from Michael Brantley, given the shoulder issue. So I think that adding another corner bat, you know, maybe somebody who could take some first base time from Jose Abreu as well, because he's had a terrible first season in Houston, just to add some sort of versatile corner bat to the mix and inject a little more life into the offense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's room for upgrades in the offense for sure. They've had injuries there as well. I'm just a little bit surprised. I mean, I guess you don't, if you're the general manager, you don't want to come out and talk about how guys in your rotation are outperforming their peripherals. But I got the stats for France and Bielak up here. So France, he does have a 3.54 ERA, but he also has a BABIP of just 265 and an 83.3% strand rate. So his FIP is actually 4.97. Still reasonable for a back-end guy, but there's a gap there of like a run and a half. Bielak has an ERA of 4.01. His strand rate is 86.9%, and his FIP is 5.54. So I think that there's a little bit of chance of regression there. And then also, like, their depth. I mean, they're already using most of their depth pieces. Like, that's what France and Bielak are. And then, you know, Forrest Whitley is going to be out for a while as well. So I think that the back of the rotation is a little bit shakier than maybe Dana Brown does, or at least is willing to say publicly.
Yeah, for me, I guess it would come down to Urquidy status. Garcia is not coming back. He had Tommy John surgery, I think in May. He's done. Lance McCullers had a setback with his forearm issue. He's going for an MRI. They haven't ruled him out for the season, but I don't know that you can count on him given the kind of repeated forearm issues that he's had. But Urquidy was sort of shut down. They've floated like an all-star break-ish timetable for him. He had some shoulder inflammation. To me, like, if they fully expect that he'll be back in the second half, kind of to assume that stable number four starter role that he's basically played for them for the past 4 years, then I don't think the rotation's as big an issue. Now, if Urquidy doesn't come back at that time or has some sort of setback before the deadline, and you're talking about, okay, now you really have to count on Bielak and France and Blanco pretty regularly for the rest of the season, then I think the rotation becomes a bigger question, as you're saying.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm looking at the AL standings now. Yankees, Astros, Blue Jays, and Angels are all within a game and a half of each other, with only two of those teams able to make the playoffs. If we assume the Orioles are able to hang on to one of those wildcard spots, and then lurking just behind them, you got the Red Sox, Mariners. It's crowded. So let's get to some listener questions. We have a question here from Dejuba. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Sorry if I'm not. other than a pure prospect, I don't see a difference-making middle-of-the-order bat being available at the trade deadline, be it a two-month rental or even someone with 1 or 2 years of control. Do you? If so, please tell me about him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Now, that's in large part because we've talked about this before, too, on the site and I think on the podcast, that the upcoming free agent market for position players is not very good beyond Ohtani, who I don't expect to move. The Angels are playing well enough that, you know, I don't think that there's much chance that they'll trade him unless they absolutely collapse in the next couple months. And so if you don't have many impending free agents on bad teams who are hitting well, then that kind of saps the obvious trade candidates. Now, for me, the big one would be Cody Bellinger. The Cubs, again, we talked about it with Stroman. They're not completely dead yet, but they're not competing right now. Bellinger's not back to his MVP peak, but he's cut his strikeouts, had played pretty well on both sides of the ball, been an above-average hitter for the first time in a couple of years. He's on the injury list right now with a knee problem, but he should be healthy before the deadline. I feel like he's kind of the one that would be my pick right now as the best just pure position player to get traded. You know, as far as some other guys, we'll see if the Marlins hold up. Jorge Soler has been really good. He can opt out, retest free agency next winter. Miami's holding onto a wild card spot right now. So as of right now, they're not going to trade Soler, but we'll see. They're kind of overperforming their run differential. There's some questions about whether the offense is good enough to keep them in the playoff mix. If they fall back to the pack, maybe they take the chance to move Soler. Sort of a similar situation with the Giants and Jock Peterson. They're in it right now, but we'll see if they can stay there. I don't know that I would call Jamer Candelario like a difference-making bat necessarily, but he's a pretty good player on both sides of the ball. He's an impending free agent on a rebuilding Nationals team. The kind of classic bad team signs veteran buyout candidate to 1 year deal in hopes that you can flip him at the deadline. And Candelario is playing well right now. I think he should fetch them a pretty decent prospect.
Yeah, it's flimsy out there. It's flimsy out there. And it's you make a good point that it's connected to the upcoming free agent market being very light on bats. I have a wild one.
That's it.
This one is, it would be like Juan Soto a year ago where it seems like there's no way it's going to happen until it actually does happen.
Is it Juan Soto this year?
Well, Juan Soto would actually be good. We should talk about that in a sec. But I'm going to throw out Paul Goldschmidt.
Okay.
Now, here's my case. As of this recording, the St. Louis Cardinals are 27 and 40. They are the worst team in the National League. Paul Goldschmidt is about to turn 36 years old in a couple of months, and he has one more year left on his contract. Is that at all possible? Am I way out? Am I insane? What do you think?
Oh, man. So I see the argument for it. I get your case. He's still playing really well. Maybe not MVP Goldschmidt, but playing really well. The team is not very good this year. I just don't think that you're talking about a St. Louis team that's going to basically punt on 2024 as well. I don't know that they're ready to concede 23, but they're kind of running out of leeway to play their way back into it, even in the NL Central. But to move Goldschmidt is basically a kind of waving the white flag on next year too. And man, that's tough for me to see, even though I totally see the argument that you're making.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where, I guess similar to Soto last year, where you could make the argument for it from a pure baseball perspective, but then do you want the PR headache of actually doing it and making headlines and whatnot? The Nationals did it with Soto last year. I don't know if the Cardinals would do it with Goldschmidt this year. Well, since we talked about Soto, I mean, the Padres are only 2.5 games out of the wild card right now, so they're not in as desperate a situation as the Cardinals. I'm in the Soto's not going anywhere camp. Do you agree?
Yeah, that was a joke. I really, it would be an absolute disaster, I think, for them to trade Soto. I mean, I think they would have to be well out of the playoff mix. And if you trade Soto, even in that case, you're kind of, again, similar to St. Louis, you're kind of punting on next year. And with all the money they invested, the front office being as aggressive as it's been for a few years, that's just way too much of a white flag move for me to see them actually entertaining.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's move on to our next question. This question is from Mike. Could this be the year in which the O's get a starter? They are notoriously cheap when it comes to big contracts or giving up the farm, but I can't see any team going deep into the playoffs with Kyle Gibson or Tyler Wells as their game one ace. If so, who are the top candidates, knowing that the O's will have to compete on the market with any team with a winning percentage over 500? Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's time to push the chips in. You know, I would have maybe been a little more aggressive than they were last offseason on the rotation front, but given what some of the top starting pitchers have done so far or not done, you know, with Rodon and DeGrom being injured and Verlander kind of struggling, I guess the Orioles front office can kind of look back at that and say, look, you know, we were right to slow play the starting pitching market. But this year, yeah, I think you have to push in on the trade front. It's a legitimate playoff team at this point, but the rotation, especially lacking, like Mike says, lacking the top end starter, is basically the one flaw with this roster. Bullpen's awesome. The lineup is pretty good. You've got a lot of upper minors talent, especially in the infield, the Jordan Westberg types, the Connor Norbys of the world that you could flip, should be able to get you a pretty good rental starter. Now, again, we talked about this with Stroman earlier, but the actual starting pitching market might not be great and hasn't kind of crystallized yet. Now there's Stroman. Maybe Lucas Giolito gets moved. Maybe the Cardinals deal a Jordan Montgomery or Jack Flaherty, who, unlike Goldschmidt, are impending free agents. So it's, you're not really talking about taking away from the 2024 roster in that case. So those guys, I think, would all be of interest to Baltimore. Maybe there's a chance of Corbin Burnes or Shane Bieber, both of whom are arbitration eligible for a season and a half. But I think when you combine the Orioles' need for a top of the rotation starter, all their farm depth, like, this is the time to at least push in for one, maybe two arms, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, you know, during the Mike Elias era, they've been so cautious. They have spent almost no money. And even when they have spent money, it's been on 1-year deals like they did for Gibson. They haven't, you know, like, even when they trade, like they traded for Cole Irvin, who is like sort of a back of the rotation guy, they haven't done the big splashy move at any point. But now they currently have the top wildcard spot. They would have to, you know, fall behind in order to not make the playoffs. So it seems like it should be the time for them to make that big splashy move. But I kind of thought the same thing in the offseason and it didn't happen. So we'll see. Okay, next question. We'll be circling back to the Cardinals. I already tried to ship Paul Goldschmidt out of St. Louis a minute ago, but this question is from Matthew. The Cardinals are full of young players that may not be stars in the making, but probably get a fairer shot at regular playing time on many other rosters to prove their worth. If the Cards ultimately become sellers at the deadline, do they really get much in moving guys like Ivan Herrera, Juan Yepes, Lucan Baker, Moises Gomez, and or one of their outfielders? Or are they content to have that depth if the returns are minimal?
Of the guys that Matthew named, I don't know that any of them have huge trade appeal. I think Herrera is probably the most interesting because he's a catcher. The other guys are kind of defensively limited power bats who are either corner outfielders, first base, maybe in Baker's case, probably just best suited for DH. Now, Herrera, he's hitting pretty well in Memphis again. He's been a prospect of some note whom the Cardinals seem kind of reluctant to give the starting job to. I think that there's an interesting case to flip him to somewhere that's not an immediate contender, give him a chance to see if he can crack it as a starting catcher, because obviously St. Louis signed Contreras for 5 years. So Herrera's path there is pretty much blocked. As far as the outfield logjam, they'd be selling low on pretty much all those guys. Tyler O'Neill is hurt right now with kind of an uncertain recovery timetable. Dylan Carlson hasn't really taken a step forward. I don't think they're going to trade Lars Nootbaar or Tommy Edman, who's playing center field for them now. So I don't know that any of the guys that Matthew named have immense trade appeal, but they're all sort of interesting players who maybe you could flip for a relief pitcher or a back the rotation pitching prospect in kind of a change of scenery spot.
It is pretty amazing how the Cardinals, I mean, they're having a bad year this year, but they seem to always be trading outfielders and yet always have too many of them at the same time. Like every year it's they're getting rid of like a Randall Grichuk or somebody like that. And now we're talking about, you know, should they trade Tyler O'Neill or something like that? And there's always seemingly a logjam there. But yeah, you're right. I think it's not so much an issue right now because Nootbaar and O'Neill are both on the injured list, but none of those outfield options are slated for free agency. So if they don't deal with it now at the deadline, they'll have to deal with it in the offseason, where you got O'Neill, Nootbaar, Jordan Walker, Dylan Carlson. I mean, is Tommy Edman going to be in the outfield, or do they move him back to shortstop with DeYoung maybe gone next year? Burleson in the mix. They have Mercado on the roster right now. There's a lot of pieces. So it would be interesting to see if they were a little bit closer in the standings, how they would play that, like maybe using one of these guys for controllable pitching. But now that they're as far back as they are, you know, it's sort of a harder sell on that strategy, I think.
Yeah, O'Neill, I think, is the one where I could see them kind of cutting their losses and moving on. I mean, he's been very inconsistent. He's shown like down ballot MVP upside at his best, but last year was not very good. He was kind of an average hitter. This year, he's been well below average and has the health uncertainty where he's battling, I think it's back issues that they haven't really been able to pinpoint exactly what's going on. He's arbitration eligible for one more year, like you said, but you're talking about at least $5 million or so if they bring him back. And given all their other outfield depth and the kind of Murphy's Law type season that he's having so far, that seems like one where maybe they either do some sort of sell low trade at the deadline or consider a non-tender next winter.
Right. All right. Well, that's all the time we have on this week's episode of the MLB Trade Rumors podcast. Thank you so much for all of your questions. Apologies for all the ones that we couldn't get to. We got so many. Obviously, the interest in the trade deadline is heating up. Got about, 6 weeks or so? So get excited. You know that's the time of year where you refresh MLB Trade Rumors and you check it all the time. We will be all over all the rumors and the transactions as everything heats up on the hot stove. So check out the website. Get that newsletter in your email. Check out the podcast. We'll be trying to do this every week. Check out our countdown series, sign up for the front office package, and enjoy all of the MLB Trade Rumors content. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLB Trade Rumors